All right. Good morning. I want to thank HACNA for inviting me to come share my experience, strength, and hope, and thank you guys for coming out and helping me get another day clean. My name's Peggy, and I'm an addict.
Hey, Peggy.
And I'm grateful to be here this morning. So our topic is, in the beginning, our willingness was born of suffering and fear. So I'm going to talk a little bit about the beginning, and then I'll talk about where I am today. I came into the rooms in 2009, that was after a long journey of using. I started using when I was 9 years old. My mom would bring back those little airplane bottles of alcohol, and I would drink them, and I learned you could fill them back up and line the top to where it looked like it hadn't been opened. You could fill it up with water if it was clear, or you could fill it up with tea if it was a lighter colored brown. And so I started drinking at 9, but by the time I was 13, I got my hands on a Long Island iced tea and had my first blackout drunk, and found that was my pattern. When I would drink, I could never get enough, right? How we say one is too many and 1,000 is never enough. That started with me early on, from the beginning of my using. I started using other substances. By the time I was 15, I was expelled for intent to distribute marijuana on school property. And at 17, I got pregnant with the dope man's baby and had my first baby. But every time that when I found out I was pregnant, I was tripping on acid, right? Well, I never tripped again. So I believed that I had the power to control my using, because at any time something got bad, I would change boyfriends, or I would change where I lived, or I would change the job I worked at. It was never the substances. It was never me, right? I couldn't see the problem of addiction. By the time I came into these rooms, I had used every drug under the sun in every way possible. And by the time I came into these rooms, I had a job, and I had a good – actually, I quit my job 2 weeks before I found recovery. But up to that point, I had this house of cards built. I wanted to die inside, and I tried several times and couldn't even do that right. But in my job, I would lead training on positive thinking and the secret to success, the law of attraction. And yet inside, I was dying, right? I would go home, and I was an I love you, now go away, mom. My kids would come to the door of the room, and I would be using, and I would be like, yep, you can go get whatever you want out of the kitchen and go watch TV. I love you. Okay, now shut the door, go away, so I could get high in the room, right? And I hated myself for that, but I couldn't, the guilt and the shame that we talk about in our ways and means to get more, and the things I would do, my bottom was falling out quicker than I could lower my standards. And when I had a moment of clarity one summer before I found the rooms, a few months before I found the rooms, I had a moment of clarity. I was having a campfire with my kids at home, and we were dancing around the fire, and I was getting drunk. And at that point, the only thing I was doing was drinking and smoking. So I had it in my mind that I could handle things, right? I wasn't doing the hard stuff anymore at that point. And my son burnt his foot on the fire, and I was so drunk in the process that I gave him half a shot and half a pill of Xanax to help him with the pain of it, and he was 10 years old. And the next morning I woke up and I knew I had a problem, but I didn't know what to do about my problem at the time. A few months later, I was at my best friend's wedding in Puerto Rico, and it was on this nice sandy beach. And the day before the wedding, I got there before everyone. Well, let me back up. A week before was her bachelorette party. And at her bachelorette party, I got drunk. And when I left, I wrecked my car. And so the whole week leading up to the wedding, I had no way to help her get ready for the wedding because my vehicle had been totaled. And so the day before her wedding, I flew out there, and I got there before everyone. And I was drunk at the bar by the time she got there. And she asked me, do me a favor, tomorrow, just for one day, don't drink. And I said, yeah, no problem. I can do that. And so the day of her wedding comes, and we had a nice little ceremony on the beach, and then it's a reception, and it's a big Mexican family and a big Russian family, and so everybody's drinking. And I'm thinking, you know, I've made it through the ceremony. I can have one drink. She won't know. Well, by the end of the night, I had made out with the caterer in front of everybody. Somehow, I broke my toe. I don't even know how that happened. I don't remember. And I had taken the microphone, and I had called her new husband boring. So I didn't know all this until the following morning. I woke up, and I tried to stand up, and my toe was broke, and I had bug bites all over my legs from I don't know what. I guess I had taken a nap in the sand or something. But she came she came to my hotel room and she told me she didn't want to see me again and she wanted me to leave. And so I remember I had these platform sandals were the only shoes that I had, and I had my rolling suitcase, and we were at this private beach resort, and you had to go over to the resort next door to catch the taxi. And I remember taking that walk of shame and watching his family looking down on me as I was taking that walk of shame to get to the other resort and catch the taxi. Well, I went to the airport that night and got an earlier flight out of Puerto Rico, but it wouldn't leave until the next day. So what did I do? Knowing that I had already had a problem, I went to the bar, right? But I knew I had a problem at this point, and I found my first little online quiz, and there were seven questions on it, and I answered yes to 6 out of the 7 questions, and it was only about drinking. And the one question I didn't answer yes to was, do you drink in the morning? And even though I would put Kahlua and Godiva in my coffee, I didn't remember that that was alcohol, so I said, no, I don't drink in the morning, because it didn't taste like alcohol to me. So I answered yes to 6 out of 7 questions, and at the end, I called this number, and they told me about this meeting. And it was at the church that I had taught Sunday school at when I was 16 years old. In fact, it was the same portable that I walked into that I had been in 16 years before, or whatever, 15 years before. And I walked into that first meeting, and on my way there, I wanted to die. And I remember thinking, if I don't find something, I'm going to drive my car off a bridge today. And I remember thinking that, and that's how I felt at that time. And I walked into that meeting, and I don't remember much else, but they had coffee, and I left with a little bit of hope, maybe just a little bit of hope that something could be different. In that paragraph that this topic comes out of, it says, the program of Narcotics Anonymous is the way we have found to escape lives of desperation and pain. But that's not all NA is. It's a path, a process, a way of life. Many of us come in with just the barest hope that we can get the pain to stop. And that was where I was at. I had that barest hope that I could get the pain to stop. And that's what I needed. I needed the consequences to stop. My life was falling apart. I had quit my job. I had wrecked my car. I had lost my relationship with my best friend. I had been a shitty mom. A few months before that, a friend of mine had come over to our house, and we got shit-faced drunk, and he left my house and died in a drunk driving accident, and I was the last person to see him. I had all these things that were going on, and my life was falling apart. Someone called CPS on me 2 weeks after I came into the rooms. And so I was dealing with all of this consequences. And I didn't know if I could really stop. If you had been through the shit I'd been through in my life, I figured you'd use too, right? And I definitely didn't know that there could be a life with joy in recovery at that point. I just knew I needed the consequences to stop. And maybe the pain would lessen a little bit if I stuck around, right? And so I kept coming. I went to the other fellowship for about a week and a half, 2 weeks, and some old timer in the room said, if you're on the marijuana maintenance program, you're not clean. And I went up to him after the meeting. I said, what's the marijuana maintenance program? He goes, if you're still smoking, you're not clean. And I said, oh, but I haven't had a drink in 2 weeks, you know? And he goes, do you do anything else? I'm like, no, I quit everything else already. And he goes, you might want to check out this other fellowship called Narcotics Anonymous. And I made it into my first meeting, and the denial was still strong, right? Even though I had been expelled from high school for drugs, even though I had found out I was pregnant while I was on drugs, even though I had used everything else under the sun, and all of it had taken me to points of desperation so bad that I switched where I lived, that I switched jobs, that I switched relationships. None of that was enough for me to see it, right? The denial was still strong. And I remember walking into that first meeting, and you know, there was an old timer there out in Kerrville, Texas, named Perry, and he recently left us, but he was a really awesome man. And when I walked into that first meeting, he looked like what I pictured an addict would look like, right? But I didn't, so I didn't know if I was in the right spot. And he handed me an Am I an Addict IP. And as I sat there in that first meeting, as I read this IP, there's like 27 questions, and I answered yes like 25 of the questions in this IP. And it talks about this being a disease of more than just the use of drugs, but the symptoms as well, right? And as I was reading through that, I think was when the denial really broke and I realized I am an addict, right? And the funny thing is there's a song called Not an Addict by Kay's Choice where she says, I'm not an addict, that's true, but that's a lie. And I would sing that song as I was getting high, right? Every time. So, I mean, I knew I was an addict deep down, right? I just didn't know that there was a solution. And when I found Narcotics Anonymous, that it says, in the beginning, our willingness is born of suffering and fear. Well, I had that willingness, right? And so I came around, and 30 days, I get my key tag. Now, I was somewhat willing at first. I was willing to listen to y'all about how to stay clean, but who were y'all to tell me about relationships, right? And it was suggested to me that I not get in a relationship right away. But there was this guy, and he had been coming around for a few years, and at the time, he had 90 days, man. And he knew what he was talking about, right? And he was going to help me. And I remember I even took him to Starbucks because I had a history of bad relationships. And I interviewed him. You know, I asked him questions about his past relationships, about his relationship with his mom. I was going to do it right this time, right? So we celebrate my 30 days and we decide to go down to Corpus. And while we're down there, he talks me into a Corona, and I'm like, one beer, what's that going to hurt, right? Well, by the end of that night, not only was I in a blackout drunk, we had scored crack at some club down there, and by the end of that night, I was in the morning at 5 a.m. naked and just my panties and a pair of socks, drinking pancake batter out of the hotel's bar, breakfast buffet. It was pretty embarrassing. I didn't remember this until a little later that morning, they had the cops there, and the cops told me politely that I needed to leave and not come back to that hotel. And that was pretty bad. And so I came back with that fear that it talks about, that willingness is born of suffering and fear. And at that point, I had some fear because I didn't want anything to happen again. I didn't want to walk through the pain that I had continually walked through, and I saw what y'all were talking about, and I became more willing. And so I started doing some of what was suggested for me in these rooms. I got a sponsor, and I started working the steps. And I remember that first sponsor. Guys, sometimes we need outside help. It says that it wasn't sufficient for us, but it doesn't say that we may not need it, right? And my sponsor, she was a counselor, and she had an office on Main Street in Burney. And that was the small town where I grew up, was Burney. And I had moved back there and was living there at the point that I found recovery. And I went to her office one day, and I looked through the window, and she had someone in there. So I sat there, and I was pacing in the lobby of her office, and I was going just batshit crazy. And she came out, and she took me to the local mental health care place in town, and they got me on an antidepressant and a mood stabilizer. And I honestly think if I hadn't gotten that outside help, I may not have been able to continue the process sufficiently, because for so long drugs had been my solution. I remember the first time I got high, how comfortable I felt, like, yes, this is it, this is what I've been looking for. And I spent the next 20 some odd years chasing that, trying to find that again, to no avail, right? And so she helped me so much. She helped me realize I needed outside help. She helped me work through the steps. And in working the steps, I learned so much about myself, right? Like, I admitted I was an addict. And then I developed a relationship with this loving, caring God, or I came to believe. And I knew who my God was. I had the same God that I sang to in Sunday school. But I had to become willing and open-minded. And my first sponsor had her higher power was Spirit with a capital S. Right. And so I learned a lot from her, too, that even though I had this concept of God, he hadn't kept me clean. Right. I hadn't used that power. I didn't have a relationship with him. But through the steps, I started developing a relationship with my loving, caring God. And I realized there were a lot of other higher powers that are loving and caring, too, like this group of druggies. Right. Like the good orderly direction that we find in our literature. Like the great outdoors where I can connect with the creator, right, who creates this beautiful artwork. I mean, there's not a more talented artist out there when you see one of those sunsets, right? And as I continued to work the steps, I remember making that first inventory. And at first I told my sponsor, I don't have any resentments. I don't have anyone I can put down on this list, right? And she's like, they'll come to you. Just pray for the willingness, you know. And so I remember one day I was sitting in the meeting and a name came to me and I pulled out my notepad and I wrote it down. And by the end of the meeting, I had 27 names on a sheet of paper. And I went home and I did my fourth step and I answered all the questions. And the next day I called her and I was like, I'm ready to process my fourth step. And I stayed up all night doing it. And she goes, well, good, but I'm going to be out of town for the next 2 weeks, so you can wait. And I'll tell you what, that was one of the most uncomfortable places to sit. It made me really go back to that third step, right? That there was a higher power taking care of me, right? That I had turned my will and my life over to. And I kept having to turn my will and my life over. And I remember when I processed that step, and we continued to work the steps, and we came to character defects. And she said that I had assets, too. And I remember me asking, what is good about me? And at this point, I didn't feel like there was much I had to offer. And she had to help point some of those things out. And it was really a neat process. As I made my amends, our steps are in order for a reason. And if you're new and you haven't worked the steps, that's where the power to change comes in, right? Going to meetings, that's like taking an antibiotic, right? If I go to the doctor and I'm sick and he gives me an antibiotic and he gives me a pain pill, the meetings are my pain pill. It might help me get immediate relief, right? But the antibiotic is the 12 steps. And if I'm going to stay clean, I've got to work all the steps, right? Just like if I'm sick, I've got to take the whole prescription, even if I start feeling better at 2 or 3, right? But our steps are in order for a reason. And early in recovery, before I worked the steps, I went to try to make amends with my brother. And I was so selfish and self-centered. He was an ER doctor. And I went to the hospital while he was working to try to make those amends. Not the right environment to do that. But he didn't accept my amends then. And when I got to the 8th step, I was like, oh, good. I'm going to put my brother on the top of this list, right? And I did, and I had him on the list. And my sponsor asked me, one of the persons, she goes, where are you on your list? And I had to put myself on that list too, right? And I had my mom, and my mom was dead at this point. Both my mom and my dad had died. And my mom was on the list. And so I got to learn how to make amends to the dead. I used to sing a song about that. And I really got to learn how to do it in the rooms of recovery, right? I got to write her a letter, and I got to go to her grave and visit and make that amends, right? But with my brother, he never, even to this day, he's never accepted my amends. And I had to come to peace with that, that I did my part, that I cleaned my side of the street, right? We can't control other people, and I've learned that in recovery. I have a daughter. I like this paragraph over here. I have a daughter, and she's very rebellious in nature, and she's a beautiful girl, and I'm so grateful. Thanks to these rooms, I have a healthy relationship with my children today, and thanks to these rooms, my kids had a somewhat stable environment to grow up in, right? And that's a beautiful thing because there was no stability before I came in these rooms. None. Like I said, I was that I love you, now go away, Mom. But now I have an open door policy, right? My kids can come at any point. You know, I leave my doors open. But my daughter likes to argue, and she likes to fight about things. If I say something's green, she's going to say it's blue, right? Just to argue. And it says in our literature, when we practice living in harmony with our world, we become wiser about choosing our battles. We learn when we can use our energy to make a difference and where we need to let go. Learning to step away from a conflict once it has started is sometimes harder than not getting into conflicts at all. This does not mean that we always agree with anyone or everything, or that we suddenly lose the power to stand up for what is right. On the contrary, we learn when to step forward and when to back away. And that's something that's been really cool, is this program has allowed me to learn how to let people be where they are, including my daughter, right? And how to not encroach on the conflict, right? But through this program, today, I look in the mirror and I like the girl I see looking back at me. And that wasn't always the case, right? Before I came into these rooms, like I was telling y'all, I wanted to die and I couldn't do that right. But today, I'm grateful to be alive. Like before I came into these rooms, I would wake up with that hangover and I would hate those birds singing outside and I would want to shoot them, right? And today when I hear those birds singing, I can sing along. And that's a gift of Narcotics Anonymous, right? If you're new, this program promises freedom from active addiction, but the gifts, like the speaker was talking about last night, stick around. Those gifts are awesome, right? The gifts of the relationships that I have. And this program is all about relationships, by the way, right? In those first three steps, I learned to develop a relationship with a loving, caring God, right? And in steps 4 through 7, I learned how to have a healthy relationship with myself. And in steps 8 and 9, I learned to get right in my relationship with other people. And in 10, 11, and 12, I learned how to keep those relationships healthy. And so if you wonder about like not getting in a relationship the first year, there are plenty you can get into. You can get into a relationship with your sponsor. You can get in a relationship with the literature. You can get in a relationship with other people in the fellowship, right? And I'm just grateful to be clean today. I don't have much else, so I want to thank y'all for coming out and hearing me speak today. And with that, I'll pass.
Yeah. I'm Vic, and I'm an addict. Man, my heart is so full right now to see this room full like this, because about 9:05, it was empty. The disease is telling me, ain't nobody want to hear your shit. See, I'm learning to listen to the recovery instead of the disease, because when I listen to disease, I act on character defects. When I live recovery, I act on spiritual principles. So that's where I'm at today. I want to thank my home group and some members here that popped up, because y'all know some stuff that I'm going through. And this talk's about in the beginning. I'm going to talk about in the middle, because I can't ever forget where I came from. So as she was talking, all kinds of shit's going through my head, because I said the speaker prayer this morning, please, God, don't let me suck. So I was told one time, it's not your problem till it is your problem. Somebody told me that one time. Of course, I didn't pay attention to it because I didn't have no problems at the time. Somebody loses a job, man, that's on you. Somebody loses a girlfriend or boyfriend, that's on them. Somebody loses a loved one, my condolences. But then it happens to me. See, the program at Narcotics Anonymous has given me the tools to deal with life as it is today. You know, nobody ever promised nothing but freedom from active addiction. But y'all have given me these tools, so when something comes, I'm able to deal with it. You know, in Galveston, that's where I'm from, the Galveston Island Group, we have what they call a seawall, so that when a storm comes, the seawall protects us. We got palm trees that bend when a storm comes, and if they're not rooted, they wash away, and when they are rooted, they pop right back up. So I am rooted in Narcotics Anonymous because I go through storms in life. It's coming. We're going to lose loved ones. We're going to lose jobs. Something's going to happen in our life that's going to make me want to go out and use. Now, I don't know if I'm supposed to crosstalk and say you and this and that, but if it happens, I'm talking about me because I'm looking at you, which reminds me of me. You know, I had one of the greatest hugs last night from a guy that had a Pittsburgh Steeler uniform on.
What?
Yeah, I hated him. I didn't even know the guy. I seen him in the lobby. I said, look at this. How dare him? And he gave me the best hug ever. See, sometimes our outside appearances don't really dictate what's on the inside. My definition of honesty is my insides match my outsides, so I can't sit up here and tell you that everything's fine. I was at the drag show last night, and the lady or the nun or whatever she was, she was messing with me, and I was getting fucking mad. Why you wear glasses? Bitch, I can't see. I mean, that's what was running through my head last night. But I learned to take it with a grain of salt, because everybody was laughing about it. Now, you know, it was no big deal. It was part of the act. And I had to get out of my comfort zone because it's the first drag show I've ever been to in my life. You know, we were talking about having one at the Tri-County, and right away my mind was, no, we've already had one in Houston. Didn't even know what I was talking about. I had a good time last night. And no, I did not make out with a caterer. As a matter of fact, I ain't make out with nobody. So I'm here with my wife and my granddaughter. I got to leave today because I got people in my life today who I got to go to Austin, which is, I've been to Austin the last 2 weeks, and I'm going to get into that. My granddaughter's at UT, and she actually wants to spend time with me. So I brought her to the convention, and this shit right there, so she can experience what she's fixing to deal with, because she's going to school to become a social worker. Wow. So she's going to, you know, here we are. This is what you see is what you get. And, you know, like the speaker said last night, he said, man, it's time to, he didn't say it in the exact same words, but I took it as take my recovery to another level. See, I'm a service junkie. I love doing service work. And sometimes I think that my group won't survive if I'm not in it. And that's a lie. Letting go of control is hard for me, so I change the words. I'm a leader, not a control freak. I lead by example. Somebody just distracted me when they walk in. This is the walking basic text. And this is what I call when I need basic text information. But he points the finger at me all the time, so I stopped calling him. This literature is awesome. So, yeah, we were supposed to read the second paragraph of Living Clean, so I kept reading and I kept reading. And the parts I got underlined is a path, a process, and a way of life. So many times I've come to crossroads, like crossroads in life, like I had a couple weeks ago, where I've got a choice to get high or stay clean, to hurt people or to show people that I have changed. I went through something where people thought I was going to relapse, my immediate family. And it's pretty cool to have you guys to process my feelings with. My daughters don't have that. But all they remember is what I used to be like. And they can't process with each other because they fight. So thank you guys for being part of my recovery. So a process, I've learned this from Tony. He Googles everything. I had to write it down, what process means. And I don't know where I put it. It's a series of actions or steps taken in order to achieve a particular end. Series of actions or steps. I lost my son last Sunday on September the 4th. I had a choice. I had to take action or steps. Now, the way that happened was my son did 7 years in prison. Beeville. He had a 14-year sentence. He did seven. And he had called me one time. I think he was at 5 years. Dad, I ain't ready to come home. And I couldn't quite get that because if anybody's been locked up, we're ready to get out of there. He says that God wasn't done with him yet. So that's when I knew there's something going on inside of him. The prayers were finally being answered. See, my problem is I like to pray, but I like the I like my prayers to be answered on my terms. I want, God is not a genie in a bottle where fix my son, rub the bottle. When he answers my prayers, I have to accept the way that they're answered. I lost my wife in 2007. That's my clean date year. Of course, I was locked up. She was diabetic. Hard-headed diabetic, which I think I had a big part to play in because I was never home. I told her I loved her, but I never showed her shit. So when she died, I was locked up and got sent off. But the reason I said that, she died, and that was the way God answered my prayer because I had prayed to heal her, to make her whole. She lost a leg. She wasn't going to grow another leg. So God took her from me, and she's at peace right now. See, I'm saying rest in peace. So if I'm saying rest in peace, maybe I need to live in peace. And if I want to live in peace, I need to follow some suggestions, man. I have questions all the time. Me and Tony, we went to school together. We were the oldest guys at U of H. People actually thought we were the professors, but we... Y'all know addicts, we can suck ass. We were the teacher's pets, and I don't remember shit I learned. But I got that degree that says I learned something. And I don't know what it is. It's like when I go to Mexico, I don't talk Spanish, but it automatically comes out. So when I'm doing my certain still, it automatically comes out. Where that came from, I don't know. But that was a path I didn't choose to follow. That was a path that God put in front of me that I hung with the winners, even though they were 20 or 30 years younger than me. I wanted what they had. I wanted to be, they would talk about their mom and dad and brothers and sisters. I'm thinking, y'all do shit like that? Y'all don't fight? Y'all don't get high behind a situation? That's what we do. Anyway, back to my son. It was, we were sitting at home watching TV on a Saturday night. That was a miracle in itself. And when the phone rings and the phone says, Travis County. So my first thought was, about time that boy calls me. He must need some money, because that's the only time. But he doesn't. Anybody's been locked up, that's why we call home, because at the end, can you send me some money? Can you send me some money? Anyway, I said, well, he must be ready to come home. Let's go, Amy. Let's go get ready. But it was not him. It was a doctor saying, y'all need to get up here now. Your son's not going to make it through the night. I'm saying, what are you talking about? Your son's Victor Gonzalez Jr., right? I said, yes. He had a heart attack at 37 years old. In front of the CO, the corrections officer, and was for 30 minutes they tried to revive him. So they got into the hospital. He was on life support. And I did not want to go in there because I wanted to remember what he looked like the last time we were there. Healthy, happy, ready to come home. Got all these plans. Worried about his son. His son and his daughter both did not want nothing to do with him no more. Because we tell people, I'm going to say we tell people we love him, but our actions show something different. She didn't want nothing to do with him until he showed her that he's changed. He's been to prison 5 times. Well, she went with us to Austin that night. And while he was on life support, she made her amends. And my grandson also made his amends through the phone because he's on an ankle monitor at 18 years old. And while he was making his amends on the phone, a tear went down my son's eyes or cheek, and then he passes away. And I don't feel guilty because I was able, because of Narcotics Anonymous, the support that this has shown me. I mean, look at the room. I'm thinking some of these people are here because of the way I'm feeling. Some people at home, my sponsors here, my friends are here. Home group members here. Corpus is here. Man, I'm thinking these people, they don't tell me they love me. They show me they love me. So the first 2 days was hard because my first thought was they gave my son a 14-year sentence, but yet they killed him. That's all going through my head. I'm angry. I want to go through this process. My granddaughter says, Grandpa, I want a place where I can go talk to my dad. First thought for me was we were going to cremate him, put a picture, make a real simple funeral. But my daughter says, no, we're going to give him the funeral he deserves because he's never had nothing in life. You weren't here for my mom. What do you know? That shit hurts, but it was true. Sometimes we have to hear the truth and accept that it's the truth and move on with life. And quit arguing with people who sometimes are being honest with me, which is something that I have a problem with because I justify everything. Anyway, we had this biggest, most beautiful wedding, 2 days, open casket, rode to the cemetery in a limousine. And my friends put together some money. His friends, who he hasn't seen in over 7 years through this barbecue, in a house in Galveston, and there's some funny shit to that because they sold like 500 plates in three, and, you know, it was through planted 3 days, sold 500, everything was donated. We made exactly what we needed to make to pay for that funeral in the headstone. $15,000 in like 2 days. Dope fiend move, right? But it was for a good cause. And the funny thing about it was when they made that money for the barbecues, all these Hispanics sagging, bandanas, you know, mm-hmm. people have been killed at that house back in the day. And the funeral director has to go over there to pick up the money. And he's just he was scared. You got a Walmart bag, you know. So he left the house. And man, we could have followed. Well, I wasn't there, but they could have followed him. But he made it to the funeral. He made it back home safe. But I thought that was kind of funny for a funeral director to come to somebody's house to collect his money. And I had no idea that my son made such an impact on his friends, good or bad. So I'm getting letters from TDC. I just got one the other day, and it was about one of his inmate friends who said he always bragged about you. Oh, shit, here comes a crying. He wondered if I did it, he could do it. See, I got like 19 felonies, been to prison 3 times. And I don't know what happened in prison. And it wasn't prison, but it was God, because everything I'm talking about was a God thing. Something clicked that I wanted to change my life. And you know what clicked? I'm going to tell y'all what clicked. It was 2 words. We were playing basketball, and some youngster called me old school. Them 2 words changed my life, because I went back to my bunk, and I said, I lost my wife. My kids have graduated. And here I am. I forgot how old I was at that time. Still doing the things that I was doing that got me in here. This mind can't fix the same problems it created. And I was sitting there, you know, if anybody's been locked up, we come real holy all of a sudden. God, please. Reading Bibles, AA books, NA books, whatever book we can read to get into information. How am I going to change my life? But my problem was that I never carried it out with me. This time I did. I had to unlearn a bunch of shit. I had to learn that, you know, I don't need to go around Menard Park or Galveston hood-wise and show people, look how healthy I look. I've been working out for years in prison. How do you like me now? Guy says he had a dime one time, and I asked him what he wants for that. He said he wants my wife, my TV, and my car. And I looked at him like he was crazy. After taking that first hit, guess what he was driving? My car. I don't need this TV. See, the disease of addiction is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And without, you were talking about that first drink, that first hit would get sets off the phenomenon of craving and gets me fucking, I can't stop. My last relapse was a dime 40 times. Every time I went back to school, this is my last hit, this is my last hit, this is my last hit. And I said a prayer, and on October 19th, I was arrested. It wasn't what I wanted, it was what I needed. Because I got to a point in life where I got sick and tired of being tired and sick, man, but I didn't know how to change. And I went into an NA meeting, and my sponsor sitting here, it's funny because he talked about when he went to a meeting, how he would measure people whose ass he could kick. He's a big dude. So I did the same thing. I'm out of prison. I can take him. They better not talk. What do you mean sit down and shut the fuck up? Who are they talking to? Guy had oxygen in the wheelchair. I will unplug your oxygen, dude. His name was Gino. He died a few years ago. And we fought like fathers and sons. And after he's passed, I realized that he was trying to teach me. He was trying to teach me to keep N.A., N.A. Because the way I was looking at life was, it's 12-step. What does it matter? Well, it does matter to me now. And how I got to that for my son's death, I don't know. As we sit here today, I'm going to Austin tomorrow, and I want answers. But everything is a process. You got to fill this out. You got to fill this out. You need a death certificate. You can't get a death certificate because it's under investigation. The Texas Rangers are going to call you. They do this all the time now after when an inmate dies. I want answers because when I went and picked up his property, his medicine was there. He's had blood clots for years. But little did I know, fruit don't fall far from the tree. He had women everywhere. When you're locked up, you have women everywhere because you need shit done. You need this woman for that. You need this woman for that. And I'm getting this paperwork. And thank God, one of the women reached out to me and says, there's an open investigation about your son. It ended last week. So I'll have the answer in 2 weeks on why he wasn't getting his medication. Or why are they cutting down his medication? Well, this is what CDC tells me. We don't have anybody that draws blood for 3 months. You know, we get sentenced to prison, but that doesn't mean we're not human. See, a lot of us are in our own prison in our head thinking that we're different than anybody else. We're not different. We're all the same. We didn't get here because our life was great. We got here because we had a problem, and we thought that drugs was our problem. Drugs, for me, was how I handled my problems. I've got, like I said, 19 felonies. I got numerous records, and every one of them is drug-related. I think our basic text says, could it be the drugs? No, it was that cop over there that was fucking with me. Well, if you wouldn't have been breaking into that person's house, maybe he wouldn't have been messing with you. I was breaking into a house one time, and I was on a bike because my car wouldn't run no more. And somebody stole my bike when I was breaking into a house. How dare them? What am I going to do with all this shit? That didn't stop me from using. What stopped me from using, I want to say the death of my wife, the death of my son. What stopped me from using was I prayed, God put the answer in front of me, and it was up to me to take action. See, I can talk about these steps all I want. It's the spiritual principles behind the steps that I have to live. You know, somebody said, I might not be as honest as I once was, but I'm a lot more honest than what I used to be. I can't even leave a Walmart basket at Walmart no more without putting it back because my wife said, "You're gonna." I don't care. So I might drive all the way home, then I'll turn around and go put that damn basket up because my conscience won't let me. I don't know if anybody's ever got away without paying for something at Walmart. Those of us that are working a program, an honest program, not say it was a God thing, because that's what I do a lot. God put that under my basket. No. The cashier probably say, you were out the door. Why bring it back? Because I can't sleep with it. See, there ain't no right and doing wrong. I'm learning these things because the other day I do landscaping, and this lady had this beautiful plant, and without knowing it, the week before I weed-eated the bottom of it, so it wasn't too beautiful the next week. It was brown. And I told her, I said, I don't know what happened to your plant, but I'll look into it. That's funny, but I actually didn't know what happened. So I got down, and it was cut at the roots, so it wasn't getting no source of support. It wasn't getting no whatever I'm trying to say. It wasn't getting something, so it died. So I called, and I said, you know what? I killed that plant without knowing it, and I'll replace it. So I did that, and because I did that, we went to our next job, and we got a big job on Monday to do. But if I'm thinking if I'd have tried to get away with that, I wouldn't have got that big job that I got on Monday. You know, here I sit around and I think about how can I do this better? Just do the next right thing. Just do the next right thing when nobody's watching, man, because my mind wants, I want to get away with shit. The process that the books talk about, it's not an event. I want to feel good now. I went to school and I wanted to graduate now. It took 8 years later because I'm a slow learner. When I speak, my sponsor introduces me as a bug that runs into the fucking light bulb. Quit doing that, Dino. Because I'm thinking that I'm different because the relationship, oh my God, I'm going to go ahead and stick. Most of y'all know this, but I'm going to tell you that don't know. Don't our book say don't get in a relationship for a year? It don't say nothing about the other person. It says me. So I justified that. And it cost me a lot. It cost me a lot of pain. I was told to put in my phone pain and suffering when I get that phone call. That didn't stop me. It'll be different this time. I got a sponsee right now. A sponsee right now called me last night. I'm calling the cops on my girlfriend. I told you she was a newcomer when you got with her. She's drinking. I told you she was a newcomer when you got with her. You're fucked up, Vic. You're not here for me. I told you she was a newcomer when you got. The speaker last night said something about, because I take things to another level. I kind of like tear shit apart. When he made that relationship with that girl, he put her relationship in front of our relationship on the back burner. She became the higher power, and the reason I can say this is because I went through the same thing. It sucks when people in our fellowship are teaching us stuff, but they're not being nice about it. That's called tough love. Because if I found out that if I baby the addict, we bury the addict. So my son is at peace right now, and my daughter, my granddaughter, Grandpa, I need a sign that he's in heaven. So a dragonfly cruises by, and there's your sign. But that wasn't the sign. About a block away, because we had to stand away from the grave site because they were lowering the casket. So we're standing by this tree, and then we hear somebody say, "Get down!" I don't know if they were talking to my son because he was going down. They were talking to us. What they were talking about was there was a homeless guy with the cops had guns pointed at him. And I said, "There's your sign." Because my son couldn't stay out of trouble. Heart of gold. But recovery is more than just not using. Like the guy said last night, my disease consisted of stealing, robbing, lying, cheating. And if I tell you I've never stolen anything, that's a lie because I stole the hopes and dreams from my family. My daughters would not talk to me. They would cross the street when they were coming home from school because they were embarrassed of who I was. But I'd cross the street too because I know they had some change left and I needed it. 13-year-old daughter tells me to grow up or some shit. And I yelled at her and she says, I told her, don't you talk to your father like that. And she says, when you act like a father, I'll talk to you like one. That shit hurts. Today she's a school teacher and we got a great relationship. My other daughter, she works at UTMB in Galveston. Got two beautiful kids and they stayed like they were because they seen what addiction did to me. I wasn't there for my son, so he got the love that he got from the streets, which caused him to live that lifestyle. He was out of control. When I went to prison the first time, he was 12 years old, so his mom had to call the cops on him and lie, and he's been locked up from the age of 12 to 37. So the only thing he knew was gang life. His favorite, I tried to listen to his music the other day. Some guy named Zero. Zero was his hero. But if you listen to the words after the fuck this and fuck that, it's pretty cool, I think. You know, because what Zero was trying to, his words were his cry for help, why he lived the life that he lived. I can relate to some of that. I'm not really the rap music kind of guy. But I'm starting to be more open-minded and listen to some of the words on why they're saying what they're saying. So the title of this workshop was, in the beginning, our willingness was born of suffering and fear. My willingness today comes from knowing what's going to happen if I use again. That I stop. I'm Catholic sometimes. I stopped going to drink the wine because my justification was it's not wine no more, it's blood. Who the fuck drinks blood? Okay. So I stopped doing that because it gave me a tingle in my stomach. Because I don't know what it did. The disease of addiction doesn't care if it's what it is. It just wants me to act out on some stuff. Acting out on some stuff right now. There's a way to act out the wrong way and the right way. I'm learning to act out the right way without throwing fits and starting to communicate. That's one thing my wife has taught me, is communicate. For anybody in relationships, communication is a key. I think she can read my mind when she drives. One of the smartest girls I know, but dingy as hell, I'm going to tell you. But shit, she gets shit done. I'm like high strung as hell. She's laid back. It's like Slowpoke Rodriguez and Speedy Gonzalez. And I don't know how it works. And she told me one time, communication's the key. I was raised, I seen my dad and my mom argue, slamming the door and getting in the truck and leaving. Guess what I do? I don't do it no more, but I used to get in my truck. My truck's got a tracking device, so she knew where I was at. I can't see at night, so I parked around the corner, so I never got the phone call. I wanted her to call me so I wouldn't answer the phone. I'm going to show her how angry I am. So, but because of communication, our life, well, we'll be married 6 years next month, I believe. She's not a newcomer. She knew me when I could see, because see, I've only got vision in my right eye. I can't even see this young lady over here. So when she puts that timer, she's got to put it over here. And the reason that I lost my eye was because I was doing some yard work and I didn't have my safety glasses on. So something popped my eye like a balloon. But I still have it because sponsor says technology, they can fix shit. Well, I'm waiting. But I'm signing up for any eye transplants or whatever can happen, but that's not an easy thing. But the reason I'm saying is today, these are not safety glasses. Well, they are safety glasses, because I have to protect my other eye, which, by the way, is 20/50, because I did so much cocaine, I had a stroke in my eye and did not know it. I just seen these black floaters, and the doctor was a female, and she's yelling at me like my mother about, are you doing cocaine? I said, no, ma'am. High as a kite. Guess what I did when I left that ER? Went and got some more. I'll show you, bitch. Well, I got to protect it now. See, if I don't protect my eyes, I lose my vision. I lose my sight of what's going on. If I don't protect my recovery, I'm going to lose sight of where I'm at in life. Whenever I get to a point right now, these Living Clean books with people with clean time talks about being stagnant. I can't be stagnant in my recovery, and I cannot always think that I know every answer. There's times when I have to call people. Tony's one of them. What do they mean? My group, home group, drives me crazy. Because, the true story, we voted to get new chairs because I think we're 41 years old. I think our group deserves something nice. And anybody's home group, y'all know that them lights don't pay themselves. I mean, I think we're at a point where we deserve nice shit. And we voted unanimously to get new chairs except one person. So I called an old timer with 40 years. He said, well, y'all get those new chairs. Just leave one old chair for that old guy that doesn't want it. I couldn't find it in my heart to do it. But, you know, dealing with a bunch of addicts, I have to be, in school, we call it critical thinking. Critical thinking means looking at things from all angles, not just Vic's angle. And I got to know that whenever I say or act, how that affects other people. That's where the control issues come in. I haven't been to my home group in almost 2 weeks now, and you know what? They're still there. They're thriving. One thing that I am learning is I am depriving the newcomers and people in my home group the chance to experience what I've experienced. I'm depriving people from doing entertainment, getting out there and hustle. Yeah, we're going to fail. I've been told, you know, sometimes we got to step back and let shit happen. But sometimes we got to step in and make something happen. You know, I tell a friend of mine, and Gino told me, instead of trying to make something happen, let something happen. He was talking about relationship issues. I'm not the kind of guy that's going to sit there and watch my home group crash and burn and wait till they're down to the last penny before I do something. I believe in setting the example. And it's not in the room, it's outside of the rooms. How do I set the example outside of the room? By dealing with my son's death the NA way. By coming in here and talking about it. Because that word disease, break it down, dis-ease. I don't want to be dis-ease because my son passed away. I want to show people that, you know what, I can get through this. I can get through the loss of an eye. I can get through death, loss of jobs. I used to work for the Astros. It's the first year that I didn't. The blind usher. Greatest thing ever, man. I can't see the foul ball. I just look where the people go, and I follow the people. And the reason I got that job is you had to have 10 years with no felonies or no nothing. I had 9 years, 11 months. Dope fiend, they'll let me go. They'll let me go. But I told the truth, and because I told the truth, they hired me. And people freak out. So jail, felonies, police records, physical ailments cannot stop an addict from achieving our goal. It didn't stop us from getting that dope. Shit, I couldn't see when I went to go school. No, I wasn't blind when I couldn't score. I had both eyes and I was still running into shit. Normal people don't push the lawnmower down the seawall in Galveston at 3 a.m. Normal people don't throw their pipe in the beach and go swimming for it later, swearing it's going to be my last hit. Do you ever try to find a pipe in the beach? Corpus, you can't. It's a process. The word process, not an event, is when I'm going through what I'm going through to get to the other side. If you're sitting in here with one day clean or 30 or 40 years clean, we're going to go through some bullshit. We're going to learn how not to get through high with that bullshit, because all that does is start it all over. I'll have 15 years next month. I couldn't get 15 minutes, man. And the hardest part for me is being open-minded, because I'm in age denial. I do not believe at that funeral my friends, how old they look. I knew them when they had hair. And I'm sitting there thinking, damn, God's been good. I'm the one that's supposed to be in the casket. I'm the one that's not supposed to be around. But you know what? God had other plans. We're vessels. He can make... I think the saying goes, I do the possible, God does the impossible. Amy talks about impossible means I'm possible. There's nothing that we can't do when we set our minds to it. Now comes not bragging. Now comes... Some lady told me, don't brag, just tell people what God and Narcotics Anonymous can do for you. But I feel like I'm bragging, so I'm not going to do it. All I know is that, you know, living the dream today. My mother-in-law likes me. Yeah, I'm the best husband my wife has ever had. I said, whoa, what do you mean the best husband? How many did she had? I don't know how much time I got left.
About 8 minutes.
8 minutes. So this is a true story. I am her second husband. But layers of an onion. We went to Whitney last year. One of her boyfriends passed away. And he's in an urn in our bedroom. How you like this? They had asked me to bring him home, to spread him on. I couldn't do it. They should have told me that his ashes were there before we got in that bedroom. So let me just leave that alone. I didn't like this dude. I'm sorry. I'm not going to sit here, I like you, when I don't. That's being fake. I try today not to be fake. I don't judge people, which is a lie. I discern people. If I don't like what you got, I'm not going to fuck with you. I didn't never in a million years that I knew this guy when he was alive, but I never knew that Amy was his wife or girlfriend because they were never together. And I don't know where I'm going with this. It's just the personalities in Narcotics Anonymous. Some people I have to love from a distance. And it's hard for me to sit up here and say, oh, I'm going to love you. A pair of lips will say anything. For me, in order for me, Vic, to love you is I have to see effort. And game recognizes game. If I see somebody trying to run game, I would distance myself. And this is where Vic falls short. But the literature doesn't lie. If you read Guiding Principles, people talk about don't judge me. Or somebody says, just for today, I'll get a better perspective on my life. Our literature, Guiding Principles, says if I see somebody being unspiritual, I don't know the exact words, but I know it's in step in tradition one. We are supposed to call people out on their shit instead of sitting around there watching them die. We are supposed to call somebody out when I see somebody fucking with a newcomer. Because you know what we're doing? We're depriving that newcomer from the process of recovery. We've lost a lot of people in Galveston. I'm sure everybody has. But some of it could have been avoided. So no, I am not an NA cop. I'm a person in recovery that cares about other people today. And I'm not going to let somebody put a 5-minute sign in front of me. No, I have a passion. I got a passion for recovery because a bartender told me I had to replace my addiction with a passion of something I like to do. I like to see somebody grow. We got a speaker in the other room who I've seen walk into rooms, and today he's sharing the message. He stuck around. There's a guy at this convention, I believe he's got 8 years clean, who was busted with my son the last time before my son went to prison. His name's Edgar. Edgar decided to work a program in Narcotics Anonymous. My son said he's a snitch. Edgar wasn't a snitch. Edgar changed his life. 8 years clean today, productive member of society. My son today, he's at peace. But I wish he was sitting up here so that he could hear me share this message that any addict can lose the desire, change their way of living, man. And it says change the way, not act as if. I can act like I'm in recovery, but I have to live these spiritual principles. Because if I'm acting, guess what? I'm setting myself up for a relapse. I have to be involved in my recovery. Because before this convention, between the death of my son and now, this is the first, well, not really the first, but the disease is telling me so many different things. But the recovery is just letting me feel it and go through it, because today I do not have the desire to use. My heart is touched because of you guys. I got a couple guys from Galveston. They had to get up at 7 and be here by 9. So thank y'all. And I wish there was more that I could say to make anybody in here feel better that's going through something. But I do know that using will not make anything away. Putting a Band-Aid on a bullet hole, we need to get the bullet out. We get the bullet out by working the steps, getting a sponsor, going to meetings, doing service work, and loving each other from the heart. That's all I got. Thank you.